Putty Shokogun, or Paris syndrome, is a condition that affects some tourists, especially from Japan, who have an idealized and romanticized image of Paris, based on popular culture, movies, and media. When they arrive in Paris and find that it doesn't meet their expectations, they experience feelings of disappointment, disillusionment, and even depression. The term was first coined by a Japanese psychiatrist named Hiroaki Ota in the mid-1980s. Dr. Ota was working in a hospital in France at the time when he started to notice that some Japanese tourists were experiencing a kind of psychological shock when they arrived in Paris and found that their idealized version of the city didn't match reality. Symptoms included anxiety, dizziness, sweating, and sometimes even hallucinations. Maybe it's not difficult to imagine Japanese tourists in particular being affected by this. French culture and sometimes foreign cultures in general get somewhat romanticized in Japan. I'm reminded of the characters from the classic video game Street Fighter II. Japan tends to go a bit unhinged when it comes to romanticizing and using stereotypes or cliches when they represent foreign cultures. You may remember Guile, the patriotic American soldier, or perhaps Dalsim, the mystical Indian yogi. Also, don't forget Blanca, the feral and wild Brazilian fighter with green skin and electrical powers, which I guess is one of the lesser known Brazilian stereotypes. I don't know. Anyway, the phenomenon could be considered an extreme example of the expectation-reality discrepancy. When we have certain expectations or beliefs about something, we tend to create mental images or scenarios of how things will be. These mental images are often idealized and romanticized based on our own desires, hopes, and dreams. However, when the reality of the situation does not match our mental images or scenarios, we may feel disappointed, frustrated, or disillusioned. The reason I bring this up is, since Japan has opened back up to tourism since the pandemic, there has been a huge influx of foreign tourists flooding the streets.
午後6時半過ぎの渋谷駅前です。ものすごい人の数なんですが、外国人観光客の姿も目立ちます。
According to this news report, the estimated number of international travelers to Japan in February 2023 was about 1,500,000, which is a pretty significant increase from the previous year. It's about 8,700% increase, to be exact. It's not really a hot take to say that the West is in love with Japan. With things like anime, video games, and manga, the cultural influence of things from Japan on the West seems to grow every year. Combine this with the world just emerging from a global pandemic, all this tourism shouldn't come as much of a surprise. I am curious, though, if any of these people experience something like Paris syndrome when they visit Japan for the first time.
So I'm originally from Canada, and I've been in Japan just for a week now, actually.
So last month I held a meetup event, sort of international picnic. To my surprise, more than 50 people signed up for it, and it was a great opportunity to hear about some of these people's stories and what they thought about Japan.
I feel like I actually didn't have all that many preconceptions about Japan. We picked it as a destination a little bit more because my husband was interested in Japan, always wanted to go there.
Hi, I'm Drew.
That's the husband.
I think I would be considered like otaku here, probably, but not, I'm not into all the figures and stuff. Like, I love anime. But that, like, I think flavored my expectations.
I am from Boston in the U.S., and I am 25. I've had an interest in Japan since I was in elementary school, so I guess a lot of my expectations were just, like, it's a place with just a lot of culture. It's just a very vibrant culture. They have a lot of art, like, very traditional artwork, and just the emphasis on respect and being, like, nice to people was just, like, the biggest impression I had before I got here. I suppose, like, the only thing that, like, was surprising to me was just the amount of people here that when I came would, like, try to speak English to me, because my impression was, like, they don't like speaking English or they can't speak English, which is usually the case that a lot of people think for countries that aren't in Europe, you know. So that was kind of my big thing.
My name is Achinta. I'm originally from Sri Lanka. When I initially got my offer to come to Japan, I looked up everything. I started studying Japanese. My general idea was it was a very pleasant country with pleasant people you can talk and make friends with. After I came to Japan, I felt I didn't actually exactly get the cultural shock because I've been used to living outside of my country, but I felt like the culture between Japanese and foreign people have like a glass wall between them.
My name is Malcolm. I'm from France. I'm 25 years old and I just came 2 months ago. I came 3 times during holidays and now I just have a job, and so my expectation about work, maybe it will be harder than my work in France, so I will see that. But it's really great to live in Japan, I think.
I am from Nigeria and I've been in Japan for 1 year. Before I came to Japan, I feel I knew everything about Japan. Like, so I got into Japanese culture and history and etc. way before I got here. Like, I was a huge Dragon Ball Z bro. Like I got into anime and then from there started following culture, etc. The only thing that surprised me when I got here is what's required to sort your trash. Like, plastics one side, burnables one side. I'm just like, what the hell is this? And then I found out they actually don't recycle the recycle stuff. Like, they actually...
I'm from Saudi Arabia. I'm 23 years old and I have been here for 5 years. So actually, before coming to Japan, I did not really know a lot about the country, because in Saudi Arabia, at the time, it did not really have a big image. Like, we only knew about the cars. But after I came, anime has become, like, much more popular, like the Japanese culture, about, like, with the movies and stuff. So with that input, I came to Japan. And then after coming here, I was just completely surprised by the infrastructure and, like, how they are, like, so strict about certain stuff that in my country we are never strict about. For example, the time. Like, they are so strict with time and stuff, and how they apologize. If they do anything, they try to avoid conflict. For example, let's say two people bump each other, they would just both apologize. In my country, it's more likely they would just start fighting. So...
I'm from Montenegro, which is in southeastern Europe, and I've been in Japan for maybe altogether 2 years. I am a graduated Japanologist, which means that I was studying for many years about Japan and Japanese culture, anthropology, history before I came here. So my expectations were not really different than what I came to. There are some things that I'm every day learning more and more, but expectations are not really changing, I would say. Maybe that I was... Can I say this? Maybe that I did not expect Japanese people to be this kind of close and this kind of, this much of, I would use the word lonely. I was expecting this little bit more different.
You were expecting it to be more lonely or less
lonely? Less lonely.
Right, so as you may have noticed, the vast majority of the people I talked to had an overwhelmingly positive view of Japan before coming here, and that view didn't seem to change much during their stay. Most had only minor qualms rather than major disappointments, and I couldn't find anyone who had experienced anything like Paris syndrome. So, good on you, Japan. In my case, way back some 15 years ago when I got the crazy idea to start learning Japanese, up until that point in my life, my main focus and drive was music. Anyway, as I learned and explored Japanese culture through movies, drama, anime, and eventually through visiting and moving here, I made a conscious decision to try to demystify Japan. I recognized the gap between my expectation of Japan and actively sought out to bring everything down to reality. I wanted to sort of truly learn what it was like to seamlessly exist between two cultures. And for the most part, I was able to avoid feelings of disappointment, and I've never experienced anything like Paris syndrome. On the other hand, it did sometimes make me a bit snobbish at first. I didn't want to admit that I liked manga or anime, or that I indulged too much in the traditional culture. I was a bit afraid that I would be perceived as a weeb.
A weeb is a term used to describe someone who has a strong and often obsessive interest in Japanese culture, particularly anime, manga, and video games. The term weeb is short for weeaboo. The term weeb can be used in a variety of ways, ranging from neutral to derogatory. Some people may use it to simply describe someone with an interest in Japanese culture, while others may use it in a derogatory way to describe someone who takes their interest to an extreme level, such as learning Japanese solely to watch anime without subtitles or insisting on using Japanese honorifics in everyday conversation. It is important to note that having an interest in Japanese culture is not inherently negative, and it's okay to enjoy anime, manga, or other aspects of Japanese culture. However, if someone's interest becomes obsessive or interferes with their daily life or relationships, it may be a cause for concern. Additionally, it is important to be respectful of cultural differences avoid appropriating or fetishizing Japanese culture.
But I think I have mostly outgrown that. Well, I hope I have. This process of demystifying continues strong. There is so much of which I still only have a vague understanding. And now this podcast kind of serves as a path through which I can continue to explore and learn where expectation and reality meet. With that said, welcome again to the Kyotopia podcast. My name is Micah, and today we are going to demystify pachinko.
Good evening. The city Nagoya in Japan, mother city of something which began as a deliberate time preventer, a sort of time killer, and which grew into a thing which affects now between 15 and 20 million Japanese every day. A sort of disease in which the attacks may be mild and last only for a few minutes, or in which they may last all day.
Pachinko machines were first introduced to Japan in the early 1920s, and by the mid-1990s, the game had grown into a 30 trillion yen industry. And despite in recent years being on the decline, in 2021, the pachinko market was still worth a whopping 14.6 trillion yen. So, what is it? Well, if you've had the opportunity to visit Japan, chances are you've encountered one of the multitude of pachinko parlors that dot the landscape. And it's not just their eye-catching exteriors that demand attention. If you've walked by and unintentionally triggered the entrance doors, that chaotic wall of sound emanating from within is practically impossible to ignore. The pachinko parlor's visual spectacle alone is enough to captivate any passerby. As a traveler, I am sure many have been taken by curiosity, only to be met with intimidation, as it is not normally something that seems accessible to outsiders, and perhaps because it is known as Japan's most notorious form of quote-unquote gambling. The idea of exploring this side of the culture at the risk of losing all your money probably keeps the curious onlookers at bay. But of course, I am sure there are many vloggers and content creators from abroad who have attempted filming from within one of the establishments, only to have been quickly reprimanded by the on-duty staff. So why so hush-hush? What's with all the hubbub? What is the deal with pachinko? This is a question that has nested in the back of my mind for some years now. And so, to finally lay it to bed, and for the sake of content, I spent the past few months trying to answer this question. It all started when I met this guy.
Please call me Mr. Tanaka.
This is Mr. Tanaka, which is not his real name. He opted to hide his identity, as some people, especially Japanese, may consider this topic to be a bit sensitive. Mr. Tanaka is a full-time professional pachinko player, which I didn't even know was a thing until I met him one night when I was out with friends at a bar near Kyoto Station. So what exactly does it mean to be a professional pachinko player, and how does one get into pachinko in the first place?
When I was a university student, one of my friends asked me to go. He had been already obsessed before he asked me. The first time I went there, I won Yomaya.
That's 40,000 yen, or roughly 300 USD.
For only about 2 to 3 hours, it was an impressive moment, and I strongly remember I was so excited. At that time, in Japan, when I was a university student, it was one of common ways for students to spend their free time playing pachinko slot. That's why, I was also interested in playing pachinko slot.
Okay, so he keeps saying pachinko and slot. As I later learned, there are basically two types or styles of machines you can find at any given pachinko parlor in Japan.
It's actually completely different.
There is pachinko, which is the traditional style machines that we will mainly be focusing on in today's episode, and slot refers to machines that are, I suppose, very similar to the types of slot machines you can find at casinos in Western countries.
So slot machine has a tendency to be more popular among young generation. Slot is a game that you use medals, and the pachinko is a game that you use a pachinko ball, pachinko small ball you rent.
All right, so perhaps this would be a good opportunity for the uninitiated to hear a rough explanation about how pachinko works. It's often referred to as pinball turned vertical. The modern style pachinko machine propels small silver balls at a pace of about 2 or 3 per second. These balls descend, bouncing off and guided by an arrangement of pins. Eventually, they gravitate towards the bottom center, where a hole awaits.
You are supposed to aim at the center pocket to get a big winning.
Most balls descend aimlessly to the machine's base, but occasionally, by the whim of physics, they fall into that small center opening. Playing the game itself couldn't be simpler. Insert money into the top left of the machine and press the button near the bin protruding towards the bottom.
You can rent 525 balls per 500 yen.
The bin will gradually fill up with your balls. With your right hand, on the right side of the machine, you grasp a small wheel handle and twist. And there's a small catch. The extent of your twist determines the velocity at which the balls shoot out from the top. Minute adjustments alter the ball's trajectory as it bounces through the pins. Your objective is to discover that sweet spot where the balls consistently plunge into the small hole in the center of the machine near the bottom.
You can get one chance to draw a big winning every time one ball goes into the center pocket.
For every ball that finds its way into the hole, you receive 2 rewards, around 3 to 10 additional free balls depending on the machine, and a chance to spin a virtual slot machine that materializes on the machine's video screen. Unlike Western-style slot machines adorned with symbols like cherries, this one displays numbers, which may be inscribed in kanji. Like its Western counterpart, a set of 3 identical numbers results in a victory, or what Mr. Tanaka calls the big winning.
The probability of a big winning depends on the machine. When you get the big winning, about 1,000 to 1,500 balls come out from the machine, and you can reuse the balls to get the next winning.
Or exchange them for cold hard cash. Each ball is worth either 4 yen or 1 yen, depending on which machine you were using. So what does it mean to be a professional pachinko player? How did you become professional? Tell me about the story of becoming professional.
The reason I was interested in pachinko and slot was, as I mentioned earlier, one of my friends inviting me. Despite winning at first, I continued losing the game after that. And in the end, I became in debt. I already became kind of addicted to pachinko and slot before I knew it. I want to play it, but I have no money. that I had to continue to win if I wanted to play it.
And how much in debt were you that first time?
The highest, 4 million, yeah.
That's about 30,000 USD. According to Mr. Tanaka, after accruing this large debt, there was a sense of desperation that drove him to try to come up with a system to earn his money back. And so he started to study.
I searched for the method to win on the internet or some magazines. I improved the way of thinking. I got the skills to win pachinko and slot, but on the other hand, I lost the enjoyable time. Like, I used to be like, what machines will I play today? How much can I win today? But now, there are no feelings like that. I just played for the win. That's it. I paid off all debt by pachinko and slot.
That, my friends, is the very moment that Mr. Tanaka decided to assemble a team.
I formed a group because I thought at the point it was more efficient to hire more than 20 people.
So in Mr. T's case, during his most prolific period, he had more than 20 people playing pachinko for him. Now, how many people do you have?
6 or 7 because of the recession in Japan and the popularity goes down.
So basically, he pays each person 10,000 yen per day, which according to him is about 10 hours at the machines. Despite their winnings or losses, they all go home with 10,000 yen. No more, no less. And Mr. T gets whatever is left. This idea I found very fascinating because I couldn't imagine if the appeal of gambling is getting the win, making more money than you paid to play, taking this uncertainty and chance element out of the experience, I don't understand what the appeal would be. So we talked about your losses. How about your biggest wins?
Million yen a day.
That's about 7,050 USD? Really? A million yen is now 7,050. Wow, Japan really is in a recession. So in order to complete my research, I figured I should get my hands a little dirty. I was hoping Mr. T would take me with him and show me the way of pachinko.
And so are you going to take me to play pachinko? Are you going to teach me?
Okay.
Can you make me your deshi?
Okay, if you want.
Pachinko deshi?
If you want, yeah.
Of course, yeah.
I didn't want to just understand the game with my head. It still wasn't quite apparent to me what the appeal was, as the game is so noisy and is mostly left to chance anyway. So to all my beloved listeners, please note that I do not advocate gambling in any way.
Do what's right, and you can't go wrong. Take it from me, Mr. T.
I'm up.
All right, so today's the day. I woke up really early. I'm currently riding my bike, heading towards the 7-Eleven that Mr. Tanaka directed me to meet him at. We met almost an hour before the opening time, which is 10 o'clock, and there was already a long line of people. I asked Mr. T if there was any particular reason why he chose today and this particular pachinko parlor. He told me that back in the day, they used to have events in which the pachinko parlors would announce that it is a special lucky day, and basically they would go in to each machine and change the settings such that it would increase the probability of making a big win. But Mr. Tanaka also explained to me that these days, because of various changes in the law, they're not really able to explicitly do so. So instead, they just make announcements that today, on this date, we are going to do our best, and it is sort of assumed that these days the machines will be easier to win. The line has started to move very quickly. I'd also notice that I'm the only foreigner in the line, from what I can tell. I would say there's well over maybe 100 people lining up. That would be my visual estimate. As we follow the line down into the basement, there were young female staff members of the pachinko parlor handing out small pieces of paper. I pulled one out, and my number is 119. The numbers represented the order in which they would be allowing people to come into the shop. So basically, if you have a smaller number, you will be able to enter the parlor and have a bigger selection of machines you want to choose, because all these hardcore players, they're very picky about which machine they choose. And apparently there's various ways of judging which one is better, which one is more likely to yield a win. But at this point, all these things are a bit beyond me. Mr. Tanaka passed his paper to someone who was waiting in line very discreetly.
My friend.
So here I am being introduced to Mr. T's pachinko team. After receiving the customary Nihongo Jozu and exchanging a few pleasantries, we all wished each other good luck as our numbers were called, and we were let into the labyrinth of flashing machines. So, you all are probably wondering, how did it go? What was the result of learning all the tricks of the trade from my pachinko sensei? Well, within 3 hours, I managed to win 40,000 yen. Which, of course, left me feeling pretty good. But it also strengthened my curiosity. I needed to prove to myself that this wasn't just beginner's luck, so I joined forces with Mr. Tanaka once again the following month, and lightning struck twice. I walked away with another 40,000 yen. And I then, after two times, I started to notice something strange. As I went about my daily life, the repetitive melody of the pachinko balls, the echoes of the machine calling reach in anticipation of a big win, the vivid memories of the parlor with its dazzling lights all seemed to echo in my mind. And this, you know, I realize I'm sounding a bit dramatic here, but it was like the game had cast its spell on me. The point is, it was in my thoughts, even when I was nowhere near the parlor. So one day, to satisfy the pachinko demon who was now brooding somewhere in the back of my mind, I decided to venture into the pachinko world on my own. However, this time, luck was not on my side. Within a short span, I found myself losing 20,000 yen. Aww. So what, if anything, did I learn from this? Well, I couldn't help but draw a comparison to Pavlov's dogs. The conditioning effect of the pachinko environment, the repetitive cues, the intermittent rewards all seemed to create a unique psychological state, a sort of pachinko trance. The combination of sensory stimuli coupled with the mindless and rhythmic gameplay created an oddly soothing experience, akin to a meditative state. Yet, it was precisely this allure that had me treading on dangerous ground. The occasional dopamine rush from a big win, the immersive environment, and the captivating nature of the game may have had me teetering on the edge of addiction. Pachinko had revealed its seductive power, and I had recognized the potential risks it held. So, with a little caution and an attempt at self-awareness, I made the conscious decision to step away from pachinko. I recognized the fine line between entertainment and obsession, and I didn't want to let the allure overshadow my life and responsibilities. So with that, I would like to conclude today's episode. Thank you for joining me on this adventure into the realm of pachinko. Remember, curiosity can lead us down unexpected paths, but it is our discernment and self-awareness that ultimately guide us towards balance and well-being. So yeah, that's it. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Mr. T, for being so candid with sharing your tips and tricks of pachinko. Thank you to all the meetup participants who shared their thoughts about Japan, and thank all of you always for listening. Until next time, keep exploring, stay curious, and never forget to consider the hidden stories behind the games we play. それではまた次回、さよなら。